I am Wendy. I'm an addict. I feel shorter all of a sudden. Oh. Okay. Hello? Okay, I feel good. No, I don't feel good. I'm terribly nervous, and I just feel so weird. And I want to blame Scott P. for that privilege. Thank you, Scott. You know, when he called me and asked me to do this workshop, my first reaction was, one is too many, .. Like, I'm all spiritual, you know, I've got like clean time, and I'm like living the dream, and I'm like so spiritually advanced from my, you know, my former life of using drugs. You know, what am I gonna, you know, how am I gonna dredge up from my own wretched past this, you know, memory of my horrible war stories and all that? You know, I need a topic like, you know, dreams coming true and follow your dreams and, you know, anything, miracles happen. And, you know, and I was like, so like, oh, how, you know, how dare he? And so I didn't call him for like a month. And, but I had other excuses that I was gonna pull into play, which actually really factor into this whole topic for me. Excuses like work and my responsibilities, my important life, and, you know, the things that keep me so busy when I'm not in a meeting that can really get distracting. But the thing that made me so fearful really about doing this workshop or doing any workshop anywhere in front of people is, you know, fear. You know, all the things that that I fear. And so I sat there in my head thinking about how terrified I am to be in front of people and sharing, how afraid of being judged I am, and how afraid of me not going down the checklist of, you know, things that every NA speaker has to go through. You know, I shot heroin, you know, make sure, you know, I, you know, and I smoked crack also, and I also drank alcoholically. So just in case any of you feel like, you know, I'm different or don't qualify or that you're better or worse, you know, also, you know, I have to mention God, prayer, the steps, the traditions, service, sponsor, sponsee. You know, I was like, oh, what if I don't say, God forbid, what if I say sober? I mean, I'll get stoned up there, literally with stones, not with pot. But anyway, you know, so all these things that that my brain is telling me, like, oh my God, they're gonna talk about me after this workshop. They're gonna say, oh my God, can you believe, like, she is so unrecovered, you know? I can't believe she said that. And then, you know, in a flash of, you know, a flash of blinding reality, I just said, I'm an addict. I'm an addict. That qualifies me for anything God wants to hand me. Not like Scott wanted me to do this workshop or CPRCNA wanted me to do this workshop. God gave me the opportunity to do this workshop, which means that I am qualified. And I had to put that fear aside and finally call him back and say, oh, okay, I guess I'll do it. But, you know, I'm still afraid. But, you know, the fact is, fear is just one of the many things that has, you know, held me down forever. You know, but the fact is, the topic is, one is too many, .. So I thought, well, you know, when's the last time in my own real active experience that came into play in my life? And I had to think back to, you know, the last time I was in treatment, which was in Second Genesis. Okay, never mind. Okay, yeah, Second G in the house. Can we get some information up in here? You know, so I was getting kicked out of Second Genesis, you know, and which you can get kicked out of Second Genesis. It's a great place to visit. I wouldn't want to live there. But, you know, so another girl who also got kicked out at the same time, you know, she called me, and I'm feeling good. You know, I didn't actually use at the time I got kicked out. It was before then, but, you know, there were some other, there were circumstances, there were mitigating circumstances to my using and treatment, which I don't recommend, you know, just for the record. It's kind of counterproductive to the whole treatment experience. So anyway, I got kicked out, and this girl called me, and she said, hi, you know, are you clean? And I said, why, yes, I am. Are you? And she said, no. I said, well, I got $10. Come on over. You know, and for, you know, the question, I always say this, you know, how much trouble can $10 worth of a drug get you into? All the trouble. All the trouble. $10, and I could not stop. You know, and that is, to me, that characterizes for me, and I hear it, everybody says it, this is not just me, this is all of us. That's what makes me feel safe to come up and share, really. I'm not going to say something that someone else doesn't feel, and that is when I use I can't stop. I thought I was going to just do one. I was going to meetings. You know, I had a sponsor in name, you know, and I was going to meetings that cute guys went to, specifically for that reason. But, you know, there was recovery there if I was looking for it, which I wasn't. But I was going through the motions of participating in the NA program and on the surface, and I used. And I thought, nothing's going to be different. I'm just going to smoke $10 worth of crack, which, I mean, I shared even. And I'll be back in the meeting on Monday. It'll be like nothing happened. I'll be the same person, but I'll have just had a little weekend vacation, you know? And the fact is, everything changed. And when I think, you know, that I can do just one and not change everything about me, that is a lie. I change. People in recovery don't do just one. You're not in recovery anymore. You know, you're not clean. I'm not clean. I'm not in recovery, and all bets are off. Because my story shows that I can't stop. And that's exactly what happened, you know, that time. And again, this is from having like 10 months, you know, going to meetings, picking up key tags, talking to people, letting people into the surface of my life. And, you know, everything. I lost everything. I lost the outside. I didn't have anything on the outside. I was crashing at my grandma's house. I was technically still homeless. I was wrecking my grandma's house. I turned it into basically a crack house. But she wasn't there, so it really didn't count. It was going to count the day she got back. But I was really counting. I thought I was keeping track of that, which I wasn't, it turned out. But, you know, the fact is, you know, just like we all do, I got caught in that cycle of just one more. And what I realize now, and I mean, when I go into treatment centers, which I love service, I love H&I, I love detox, I love the, you know, I love going, it's like, I used to watch that show MASH compulsively as a child growing up. You know, it was like our favorite show. And I think, sometimes I think of H&I as like being in a MASH unit. You're like going to the front, you know, in the trenches, you know, where it's happening. And I go and, you know, it's, I forget what the hell I was going to say. Something really deep. You guys would have loved it, except that I forgot. You know, so anyway, service is awesome. Check. Thank you. Okay. Thanks for letting me share. So I finally ended up back in the place of you know, being beaten down to the ground, you know, and that's where we all come from. You know, a bottom is something that happens inside. It happens inside me. It's not because I shot too much heroin or I shot too much whatever or I smoked too much crack or smoked too much weed or drank too much, you know, wine out of a box. You know, a bottom happens inside me when everything inside me dies. And, you know, that's what happened again. And, you know, I came crawling back to where, you know, what sucks about relapsing again is people call you, you know. It's like, God, why did I give these people my number? I'm trying to get high up in here. And they're like, we miss you in a meeting. I'm like, oh, God. Let me go pick up another white key tag again, share about how it sucks to use, and go out and get high. That's life, let me tell you. Awesome. But, you know, even that stopped working. Awesome as it was. And, you know, I came crawling back here. And, you know, just hitting that bottom inside where everything in me was dead. And I finally came in here. And you know, the thing, you know, I didn't get clean my first treatment center or my first detox or my first mental hospital or my first attempt at an intervention. I got clean the last one. You know, and I think every one of us has a last one. You know, we criticize ourselves for like, well, I got, you know, I went to treatment the first time when I was 16, or my parents, you know, sent me to Betty Ford when I was 18. You know what? Nice. Enjoy. But really, you know, I got clean when it was time. You know, after every hit, every fix, every lie, every theft, every shame, every guilt, everything. That's what it took to get clean. And at that point, I came in here with the willingness that only the dying have. You know, and that's what we all had, and it comes from inside, not outside. And you know, and I threw myself into this program with fear, full of fear. Not because it wasn't like I came here and I was like, right on, okay, NA, new way of life, spiritual awakening, sign me up, you know, I'm healed. It was like, what the fuck else do I do? You know, I have nowhere to go. I've burned every bridge, I've broken every promise, I've hurt everyone who tried to get close enough to love me. What do I do now? You know, that's where NA comes. You know, for those of us who are broken, who are desperate, who are empty, who are full of fear and empty, empty of love, empty of hope, empty of anything but that raw, gaping need for just one more. And you know, that's where NA filled that hole that was waiting for just one more. And that's what I know from what I learned eventually from treatment going back, is just one more is in your mind way before you use. You know, I go in there and I'm like, I'll be in there and I'll say, you know, you want to get high right now. People in this treatment center or detox, you already know. You know, the guy that was sharing earlier was saying, you know, he was desperate in treatment or in detox or something, but just, and knew that drugs were killing him, just like me, knew drugs were killing me, but just let me go and get one more so I can come back here and kill myself or go to treatment or something, but I just need one more. I'll be right with you. You know, hold please. And you know, just one more is something that, you know, it had to be scraped out of me, you know, by that last bottom. And that, you know, when every reservation, every feeling that I can do it right, everything, every last manipulative hope to finally be able to use successfully, when all that was scraped out of me, then I was really ready to receive this message. And you know, it took everything. But so I got clean, I stayed clean, and the things that keep me now from going doing that just one, that is ever so many too many, are those many, many tapes that I made. And you know, people always used to say, you know, play the tape through. The fuck are you talking about? I got a CD player. Well, I did before I pawned it. But really, tape. But then I realized that I have this library of tapes that are so handy, and it's like the old VCR tapes, you know, that we used to have at my house, that we would always record stuff off the TV, you know, Bunny Picnic and, you know, classics like that. But it would be, you know, like Wendy Takes Drink in a Bar, ends up in mental hospital. You know, or the ever popular, you know, Wendy tries to just do one hit of crack and wakes up 3 days later with no job, you know, and these, a whole library, all classics, fun for the whole family. And they're all, and ridiculous, because they would start with just one planned, measured, reasonable, responsible, conservative little one. And they would end with some crazy shit. You know, shackles and rope burns and mysterious black eyes and rent money gone. And, you know, and those are those wonderful tapes that when I think, that get a brilliant idea like, maybe I can drink normally, you know, I think of those tapes that I always thought I could control. I could always control it. I would plan, you know, it's gonna go like this. And, you know, it just never turned out that way. It turned into some crazy, bizarro reality show from hell. And you know, that was my life. But you know, I stayed clean, I got involved in service heavily, and I mean, I think heavily is kind of, I'm sound like I'm kind of blowing my own horn, but I love service, so I did it because it felt good. And you know, I was NA cheerleader, you know, yay NA, come on everybody get clean. And I loved it, I love it. And then I also found that I have other character defects, like, you know, I'm a recovering 13 stepper also. And you know, and service, well, no, I never picked anyone up in H&I, like in detox, but I would be like, so how much clean time do you have? Oh, you have a year? Oh, you should totally come lead my detox meeting. But I mean, usually it was legitimate. I mean, so only a few of them were really cute, but really, the fact is I made some mistakes. I made some mistakes, and I found out that, you know, one is too many is not just about a drug. You know, and it was with this newcomer project that I picked up, very nice. If anyone knows him, wonderful guy. Love his mother. He's a very nice lady. But you know, he was what he was. I picked him up that way, and I thought, you know, I'm gonna make him perfect. You know, I'm gonna really, he's so new, you know, he's like putty in my hands. And no comment. But anyway, so nice guy, but years went by in this relationship that was not working, and I couldn't stop. And you know, it was everything that I went into. The man is just a man. The drug is just a drug. You know, crack is just crack. It's out there being crack right now. It is me, it is my dumb ass that will go out and pick it up and use it as a weapon against myself. I can do that with anything. The poor man, innocent bystander, I'll call him, I picked his ass up and used him as a weapon against myself. A reason I couldn't work the steps, a reason I couldn't have a sponsee. He was so jealous, he was so insecure, it was who he was. He had not worked on anything because I took over sponsoring him, you know? But then he was so insecure that I couldn't have service positions or have a home group, or God forbid a man call me. So my phone was full of, hey, I heard that. My phone was full of names like Stephanie, you know, for Steve, you know, anybody, any man in my home group was like, oh, that's Mary, you know, leave a message, you know, and I was living this sneaky, dope fiend, underhanded life, which I was getting off on, you know. I had to look at what was my payback. There's always a payoff. You know, if it's not working, I'm not going to be doing it. Why? I got to be the victim. I got to be super victim. I cannot believe you stay with him. I know, but he's such a good man inside. You know, I got to be like super martyr. Poor Wendy. Can you believe it? Yes, get off the cross. We need the wood, you know. But really, you know, but what happened? You know, I hit bottom. I hit a terrible, excruciating. Those of you who know me know this. This poor man, we'll call him Crackbert. You know, because that's how it was. My girlfriends were like, girl, you are like crack with him. I'd be like, I'm just going to call him one time. Just to tell him thank you. Because we had some great times together and we'll always be friends. I'll always be there for, I just want to say, you know, thanks. You know, I'll always be there for you as a friend. I really appreciate the good times we had together. And I really learned a lot from you. And, you know, if you ever need anything, I'm always going to be in your network. So call me, you know. But, you know, that one call, just one call, it would start out, you know, all day. I'm thinking. Okay, don't call him. But I'm just going to call him and say hi, you know. If anyone has Verizon, that ring, 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 beep, that it does when they're on the other line, let me tell you, I would call one time and I would get that ring, 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 beep. He's on the other line with another woman. He knows it's me. That the cycle, oh my God, it would start. I would be, I'm calling him again. He knows it's me. Maybe someone else is calling him. The rationalization would kick in. Maybe someone's leaving him a message. Maybe it's work. You know, he's very busy, you know. And I would start calling. One call would turn into four, would turn into nine, would turn into 20, would turn into I'm driving to his house. Maybe he's sick, you know. I'm gonna just check up. You know, and I was crazy. I was crazy. Stalker crazy. And this was a poor, unsuspecting newcomer. Thank God he didn't use. Or kill me, or himself, or anyone else, you know. And he's clean today, and doing great. As far, call me if you're out there. You know, we're still friends. I totally respect you. No, just kidding, honey. No, really. But I found I hit the same bottom, that same desperation. And let me tell you, it really came to a head. People who know me know, at this convention some years back when, you know, I came to get him back. You know, I got my eyebrows waxed. You know, I got a new, like, thong. And I was going to get him back. And, you know, he showed up with his real girlfriend. And let me tell you, you know, when it stops working, you know, the men stopped working. That thing I put in the hole in me did not work anymore. How do you fucking stop? You know, I can stop. I can stop for 5 minutes. Look, I'm stopped right now. Just don't talk to me in 5 minutes. 5 minutes from now, when it's on again and the wheels are turning, and I just can't stop. You know, and it was like using, except without the drugs, without the relief. Honestly, it wasn't, I didn't want to use, I wanted to die. I didn't just want to die, I wanted to have never been born. You know, dying wasn't good enough. And I mean, I was like looking at these buildings, I was like, what one is tall enough for me to jump off of? You know, I was so desolate. And you know, there's nothing. Pain in recovery, it really hurts. I never felt shit until I got clean. I never felt shit. And you know what? Feelings are a bitch. I think addicts, we're exactly like normal people. We got all the same feelings, fear, loneliness, pain, rage, jealousy, envy, except just turned up like 1,000%, you know, to like 20. Normal people go to 10, we go to like 20. It's exactly the same. We're just like normal people times 1,000. You know, so here I got all these feelings and I don't know what to do and I can't stop. And I asked for help from those same catty bitches that I was not trying to talk to because they were probably, he was probably sleeping with them anyway, which he was, but that's a whole nother story. But really, no. Yeah, he was. But you know what? I had to ask for help. Just like I did when I came here, I had to ask for help. Just like when I came to NA and said, help me. I don't know myself. I don't know what I want. I don't know who I am. I don't know what I like. I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. I'm scared. Help me. And I said, help me to these bitches in NA who knew exactly what I was feeling. And I never gave them the chance. I never let them in. And they loved me in a way I never had been loved before. I was never understood. Because I never let anyone in. When I was snot-nosed, running down my face, crying in meetings, boo-hoo-hoo, I want to die over a man. And they were like, it's okay. And you know, that, and I realized that I wasn't alone, you know? Yet again, the magic, the power of NA, I wasn't alone. Even in that darkest, most desperate time, when I felt like no one could possibly understand, you know, the way I'm feeling. I was not alone. And they picked me up and carried me when I couldn't love myself, I couldn't stop. And they said, treat him like the crack dealer. When you want to pick up that phone and call him, call your sponsor, call your girlfriend, call your network, call your job, call, do anything for 5 more minutes. And it was just like going back to the very beginning and just buying 5 more minutes of time, 5 more minutes. 5 more minutes, 5 more minutes, and you know what? It got better. It passed. Just like if all this shit in my brain, it passes. If I don't use, if I don't pick up, if I don't pick something up and turn it against myself, it will pass. All these feelings, good and bad. And you know, that's the strength. People told me stuff like that when I got here, but you know what? You don't ever really understand it until you live it. And time, you know, it really takes time. And I always, you know, I treasure the moments and days that I have clean, because it took every single one to teach me the few things I know today about myself. I don't know shit about anybody else, but I do know in me, if I don't act out in a self-destructive way, it will pass. And that lure of just one, you know, so what's just one gonna hurt? You know, just one. Come on, I'm financially responsible now. I've got a pretty decent job. Well, okay, it's not that great, but you know what, it's enough. You know, because I have simple needs, you know? And who's it gonna hurt? It's not gonna hurt anybody but me. You know, and that's what I always told myself when I was using. I'm not hurting anybody. Come on. I'm hurting me. And you know what, today I'm enough. You know, not hurting myself is enough reason to do good. You know, and so I finally decided I might have something to share and told Scott I would come to this stupid workshop. And then I hit another bottom in February of this year, sick from overwork. Let me tell you, I moved to the Caribbean, to a beautiful island, you know, a beautiful island in the Virgin Islands. It's like paradise, it's beautiful. But the problem is I took me with me. And I thought, I'm moving to the Caribbean. I'm gonna leave this workaholic DC metropolitan area keeping me down, you know? I'm gonna break free. I'm gonna be free. I'm gonna live the dream. I'm gonna be on the beach every day. I'm gonna work when I want to, relatively. And you know, and I thought, it's this area is keeping me down. I've just gotta get away. And you know what? I'm the problem. Work is just being work. I'm the one that will pick it up and use it as a weapon against myself. And it goes back to self-esteem, just like with the relationships. I want them to like me, you know? I want them to need me. I want to be important. I want to be indispensable. I don't want them to be able to live without me, you know? Just like every relationship I've ever had, you know? They can't do anything without me. I'm gonna make them completely dependent on me because I'm super addict. No, I got this. I can run this place. All you are incompetent. Just, you know, step to the side. You know, I'm the queen. Oh, good, 5 minutes. Whew. Good, because I'm almost cured. But so finally, honestly, I had this cough for 6 months and I was too busy to go to the doctor. And all my friends were going, God, something is totally wrong with you. And I was like, no. I'm super addict. I couldn't possibly be sick. And then, but really, it was really like, no, I don't have time to go to the doctor. I'm too busy and important. You know, they need me. I can't go to the doctor. I'll do that on my vacation. So finally, you know, I was run down, not eating right. I was beat up. I was worn out. I was stressed out. I wasn't sleeping. I was waking up at night worrying about work. And I work at a golf course, mind you. It's not like I'm a CEO of like a multinational corporation, okay? This is to show you how I can manufacture shit. I mean, you would think I was like, you know, curing cancer. But no, I run a golf course, okay? So, you know, I finally realized, you know, this is the opposite of everything I would tell anybody I love to do. Anybody I care about, anybody in NA, I would say, get your ass to the doctor. You know, take care of yourself. And I went to the doctor, and I walked into his office, and he heard me coughing in the waiting room, and he said, are you under a lot of stress? And I broke down. He touched my arm, and I broke down and started crying, and I said, I can't stop. I'm working myself to death, and I can't stop. And it was like listening to someone else. It was like I was outside my body, looking down, going, oh, shit. What did I just say? This is the addict. This is me, the addict, rearing my own ugly head in every aspect of my life, given a chance, you know, and laying in his office in the waiting, you know, in the examining room and everything, forced to take that 5 minutes alone with myself that I had not been taking. I laid there and I thought, you know, this workshop, which I'm also obsessing about, letting it add to my level of stress, and just mania, I said, you know, this isn't a workshop on what I can say to help someone else. This is God's message to me. You know, and I always try to pray when I do a workshop or have to speak in front of people or whatever, which I haven't done in several years, so I'm very rusty at this. But I still, you know, I'm cool by my tape. But no, you know, I try to pray, you know, it's not about me, it's not about me, it's not about me. But you know, at this time, it really isn't. It is about me. No, it is about me, screw all you guys. Because really, I need this. I need to shut up, listen to myself, listen to my own heart, take care of me, and take it back to basics, back to the beginning, like I do whenever my life gets out of control, when I get unmanageable, and say, help me. You know, and come back to the first step. When my life is unmanageable, you know, I know what to do. I know what to do next. Ask for help. Turn it over. Let it go. Believe that it's going to be okay. Something bigger than me has got me. You know, I pray to God and NA answers. You know, it's the craziest thing. I don't know how it works. I don't know. I never had God before I came to this program. My family was ashamed of me. My sisters, when I said I prayed, they were like, oh, God, don't tell Mom. You know? And, you know, I said, really, really, that's how I was raised. God was some, like, white Republican dude that was, like, judging us. You know? And I got in here, and they said, trust God. And I was like, sure. Can I act as if instead? Because that's working for me. But you know, this is the power greater than myself that I've been looking for my whole life. It's right here in this room, because this is where we bring not necessarily what we are or what we were, but what we want to be, what we can be, what we will be, what we hope to be. And we bring our dreams here. And this is where God lives. You know, all of our hopes together, loving each other unconditionally, accepting each other with all the insanity, all the stupidity, all the delusions that we bring when we open our mouths and the ego pours out, myself especially included. You know, this is where I get what I need to stay sane, as close to sane as I get, you know, and you know, I need it. I keep coming back. I try to do the next right thing, and you know, I know that one is too many. One of anything that's going to destroy me. One man with a tattoo on his neck. No offense, but I mean, domestic violence charges. You know who you are. You know, today I don't have to go out with you. You know, against my will. No, but he's so sexy, and he just got out of prison. God, he's totally rehabilitated. You know, I don't have to use something against myself as a weapon. You know, I could come in here and I could be relieved of my own insanity. And you know, if I don't pick up, I can't get high. If I don't get high, I don't have to come back and relive that first day. You know, that first endless, endless day of shame and pain. And instead, I stay because, you know, as hard as it gets, it's still easier. And I'm just grateful to be here. I'm grateful this is over. And thank you for letting me share.
All right, our second speaker is Cedric Kay.
Good evening, group. My name is Cedric Nomadic.
Hey.
And thank God I stand here today clean. First of all, I'd like to thank CPRNA for asking me to come and share my experience on this topic. One is too many. And I personally want to thank Scott. You know, when he asked me that about sharing on this topic, I was real nervous, you know, and I still am now. So I'm going to go ahead and get that out. And that's why I want to thank, because if I forget something, y'all just bear along with me. And I enjoy, again, what Wendy was saying about, because what I realized today, that drugs wasn't my only problem. You know, my clean date is January the 17th of 1992. My home group is the Family Circle meeting. We meet every Sunday at 6 p.m. So if you're in D.C., come on past and show us some support. You know, I just celebrated 16 years in January. And what I realized was that in the 16 years I just celebrated, I've been clean longer than I've been using it. So for y'all that want me to come up here in a half an hour and share my whole experience of 31 years, it's not going to happen. But what I'm going to do is going to share how it was for me, because I was wondering what I was going to talk about. And when I shared with my sponsor, he won't let me share on steps right now because we're going back through a cycle of the steps. But when I said about one is too many, we know how we do in our group meetings that that's something that maybe somebody might get something out of. But most of all, I'm going to get something out of this tonight, because my story started in D.C. I realized, like I said, that it was something else other than drugs that was kept me back, because I didn't like how skinny I was. I didn't like how big my nose was. I always wanted to be this big, barrel-chested guy, you know, or something. You know, growing up in D.C., we used to go to these waistline parties. My waist was like this big, you know. And whatever your waistline was, you paid to go in. And I was real bashful. I was real shy. You know, I really didn't like to be around people, you know. And what I found out, I realized now today, is that I always needed something to make me feel different, you know. And I found that in drugs. I didn't know that 16 years or 30-something years later, I'd be standing up here sharing my experience. But what happened was when I put that substance in my system, it changed my mood. I realized that I was somebody that I always wanted to be. But what happened was, like any good addict over there in Southeast where I grew up at, you know, I start, you know, everybody started off drinking some form or another. I started off with alcohol, you know, and that progressed to I skipped over reefer, I skipped over pills, I went straight to heroin. You know, I don't know nothing about crack. Crack is not my story. So if you can't hear about crack, you won't hear that neither. But what happened was I went straight to heroin. I started off snorting. I think about a summer or so later, somebody suggested, I was a good suggestor, I always took good suggestions off the corner. Somebody suggested if I mainlined it, that I could get a better effect. So what happened was I started shooting. You know, I started going intravenously. And I think that was the beginning of the downfall. Come on. You know, it just didn't start off right then. It was progressing. My disease progressed on and on and on. What happened was I was going intravenously. I was calling myself doing all the so-called things that normal people would do. You know, I got in a relationship. You know, I got a little apartment. I always wanted to grow up because I felt so bad about myself that when I was around other people and using, I could be somebody else. You know, and shooting dope kind of like turned me all kind of ways, and I was my worst enemy. Growing up, I was up there on 15th Street, you know, like I said, I look at other guys, you know, I had managed to get a career in the printing industry, you know, I look at other guys and just thought I just wasn't that bad, you know, I thought if I can, I looked at them and as long as I was doing what I was doing, I was making good money at the time, you know, I was bringing home. I was making like $15 an hour back then, you know, money was good. Somebody suggested that I go on the methadone, get on the methadone program. I went and checked into a methadone program. They're talking about one is too many. God, it's just a going thing. I checked into a methadone program for a 15-day detox. I mean, they wanted a 21-day detox. They put me on 21-day for 15 milligrams, you know. And I stayed on methadone off and on for something like 9 years. Wow. You know, doing the same thing, expecting something different, you know. And I always just wanted. Many times I went out the cop. Then that was all I wanted. You know, when I went coming off methadone, I had to go into treatment because methadone is not like, for me, it was a physical disease. You know, more so like mentally, it was physical. You know, when I didn't have heroin in my system or methadone in my system, my body shut down, you know, and I got to this point where I kind of like maybe I wanted to stop, you know, but I just didn't know how to, you know. I crossed that line from just a sociable user, you know, like I said, it became a physical addiction, you know, and a lot of people told me before I came here that maybe I need to check in and try to get some kind of help, and I can remember checking in the suburban hospital. I went up there for a 10-day detox, and I was never no long-term treatment, so I went in there for 10 days, you know, but I don't suggest that for nobody. The 10 days I stayed in there, I had a friend of mine bringing my drug of choice in and out of that treatment center, you know, the whole time I was up there, you know, and it was more like a playground, you know. I got out, you know, I got out of that treatment center, and I went back on my job and stuff and was still doing the kind, basically the same kind of thing. Because I always thought, when I got by myself, I always thought that maybe I could just do just one. That one just wasn't going to hurt me. But when I came off methadone, at that second time, you know, I said that maybe if I just try to slow it down just on paydays, maybe on weekends, that maybe I might be all right. You know, that maybe I can be able to do this. But I can remember going up on 15th Street one day. And I just bought a little car. My mom was staying over there in Southeast. And I told a guy, asked me would I take his girlfriend home over on Palmer Road. And I wanted to get high so bad. You know, my disease had taken to my point. I wanted to get high so bad that I couldn't wait to really, like, take his girlfriend and stuff home. I said, won't you just take my car and bring my car back? You know, for the equivalent of like $25 a bag of dope and a bag of crack. You know, he took a bag of cane. He took my car, and about 3 days later, I found my car. Police called me over there and said that my car was found over on Palmeroy Road. You know what I'm saying? What's going on with my car? He's talking about my car was wrapped. I went over there to see it. They got the car towed back over in the Southeast and put the car back, and the car was total loss. You know, the front end was all smashed up and all that stuff, and the guy was coming up there asking me, Cedric, how can you give your car to somebody you really don't know? You know, and I really couldn't explain how the hell could I give my car to somebody I really just didn't know, you know, but my disease still didn't slow down then. You know, I was still doing the same thing. What happened was I had a inspection sticker on that car, you know. I sat out there and cried and boo-hooed that how could I do something? How can a smart guy like me get that I just couldn't beat my disease? You know, I just thought there's some kind of way that I could find a safe way to use, you know. That inspection sticker that was on the car, I realized that sticker was worth like $20 in D.C. You know, if I get that sticker off, that'll be $20 toward the next one, you know. I sat out there, put hot water up under that sticker for about 2 days trying to scrape that sticker off that window, you know. I put wet rags on it, warm rags on it, you know, and it's just you know, I wanted to get high just that bad. And the car, I knew I couldn't do nothing with the car. The car was total loss, you know. And I said, if I get that sticker off, that maybe I might be able to go again, you know. I got that sticker off, got it pulling down, and I went to pull the sticker off the windshield. And what happened was it said void, V-O-I-D on it. You know, I didn't know that once the stickers come off there, that they weren't no more good. You know, you couldn't do nothing with it. It took me 3 days to try to get that thing off. You know what I'm saying? And I really couldn't believe the things that, you know, my disease, it took me, you know. After I came through Suburban Hospital, I ended up in Washington Hospital Center. And on my job, they suggested I go on a treatment. They seen the behavior. I was getting paid on Thursdays. By Friday, I was broke. You know, I was an operator on a machine. And I was going around on Fridays, you know, asking these guys to clean up, you know, asking them for lunch money. I never wanted nothing until I didn't have no money. You know, so as soon as I didn't have no money, that's when I always wanted, you know, because it was a hot dog stand down there by the State of Miami subway stop. You know, I used to always catch the bus there going in. And I'd be up there looking at that hot dog stand. I could have $400 in my pocket. But it was either the hot dog stand or Potomac Gardens. You know, that's a little 24-hour drug market and back where I stay at, you know. And I always made that decision, you know, to go down to God. I don't care what was going on with me or whatever. You know, I would always seem to make a decision. Because like I said, when I got by myself, I always told myself that wasn't nobody going to know what I was doing. You know, I got out of treatment. I heard they brought the message of recovery down there to the meetings, you know, but like I said, they were coming in there, they were saying, you need to get honest, you need to talk to somebody, you need to tell somebody really what's going on with you, you know, but I always had that thing that some things I just wasn't trying to release then, you know, I always went through that cycle, you know, that I just wasn't trying to tell everything. I had a hard time early on trying to tell the whole truth. You know what I'm saying? Because they was telling me if I didn't get honest that I was doomed to use again. And I heard Wendy talking about using. And relapse is not a part of my story. I guess because I took a good enough whipping out there that time that I really didn't have. Because I was in and out of the program. You know, I ended up in a Washington Hospital Center. I went up there for a 14-day treatment center detox. And what happened was I was cutting hair at the time. And I went in the treatment center, and there was a lot of young guys in there, and I was telling them they didn't have to really live the way they was living. that maybe if they try to get their life together, that maybe they'll be all right. You know, take it from an old dope fiend like me, you know, that maybe they can get their life together. You know, and I realized today that I went in that treatment for all the wrong reasons. I didn't go in there for me. I realized I was the worst. I was the worst person in that treatment center. You know, and I sat up in there for 14 days. I was coming off methadone, and I was coming off heroin. I can remember, and the planes was, I mean, helicopters was taken off from Children's Hospital, and I sat up in that treatment center and wonder how a smart guy like me ended up in a place like this. You know, I couldn't believe that. I just couldn't get over that disease, that I couldn't just do just one. You know, I couldn't understand it. You know, all I ever wanted was just one. You know, and I sat up in Washington Hospital Center for 14 days, and after that 14th day, they was having meetings downstairs. They was saying that I needed to come to some meetings, get a sponsor, get a network of people, and share, you know, what's going on, and try to find a God of my understanding, most of all, you know, because I always had somebody else's God, and I never had mine, you know. So I sat up there in that 14 days. I was voted most likely to succeed, you know. Everything was out. I was getting up. I was waking people up in the morning. I was telling them to come to group, you know. Everything was going to be all right. And I say, I'm going to try this thing about recovery, you know. By this time, you know, coming off that methadone, I came off, they detoxed me off of 60 milligrams of methadone in 6 weeks. You know, they gave me paraflexes, muscle relaxers, all that other stuff to try to settle my body down, because my body was going through changes. You know, I was weighing about 40 pounds less than what I'm weighing now back then. You know, it was crazy, you know, the disease that had me. So what happened was I sat up there in Washington Hospital Center. They told me before I got out of that treatment, and they say, Cedric, you need to go to a meeting, find a sponsor. And I kept telling myself that maybe I just need to just go away some long-term treatment program, and that everything was going to be all right. Just get away from D.C. and this environment of Southeast and all the people that I grew up with, that maybe I can get some help, you know. And I realized today that definitely wasn't working. But what happened was they told me to go to meetings, and my job had sent me there. My job had sent me there for that detox. You know, they knew I had a problem, you know, but they always said I was a good worker. I always had good intentions. You know, I had good intentions for everything, but my intentions always went astray. You know, I always started off to go to the right. You know, even when I came out of my apartment building, I could even go to the right to go to the subway station. I mean, to the right to go to the Safeway if I had money, where I'm supposed to go to the Safeway, or go to the left to catch the subway down to Potomac Gardens. You know, always sat at the crossroads waiting, you know, trying to make a decision about which way I was going to go. So when I was in Washington Hospital Center, I thought I said to myself at one point in there that I really was going to try this thing about Narcotics Anonymous. I heard, you know, that this program would work. Maybe for a guy like me, I compared myself out, because like I said, I call myself a functional addict, that some things I had, that if I got that bad, you know, but I was, like I said, I was still being untruthful to myself. I was lying to myself. You know, I kept telling myself that maybe I could stop whenever I wanted to. It never dawned on me to stay stopped. And I could stop for maybe a day or so, you know, but I had methadone, or always had a crutch or something else on me, you know. And like I said, when that 14th day, when I got out of Washington Hospital Center, I was going to meetings. They told me to go to meetings, and I had a slip that I was supposed to get signed. I got out of the treatment center. I went on my job. I told them that I just got out of detox, and it was 14 days, and I was trying to start this process. I didn't tell them in detail that they told me to go to meetings, but they suggested I go to meetings on my job. So I don't suggest this for nobody. I was going to meetings. You know, what happened was, let me back up. The first day I got out of treatment center, after that 14th day, you know, here come my disease telling me one more time again. Contrary to anything I believe, I always told myself that maybe, you know, I can just try it once. I was in there for 14 days, and in my whole life, I'd never been clean 14 days without a substance. I was smoking cigarettes at the time. So what happened was I had a check at home waiting for me, about $500. You know, and I was in there shaying. I was telling them guys that I was going to try to get this thing together, you know. I was going to do this thing, and I kept telling myself when I got home I was going to take that $500 and apply it towards some back payments and bills and stuff that I had and all that other stuff that I had just ran up over that period of time. What happened was I went on a job. I told them, they gave me the check. You know, they said, you want to start work today, Cedric? I said, I'll come back tomorrow when I get myself together, you know what I'm saying? And I swear I had the good intentions that I wasn't going to use that day. You know, I got that check, You know, I put it in my pocket, you know, and I was headed back from Maryland. All I had to do was make it across the D.C., Maryland, D.C. line. But it's another open-air drug market called Central Avenue and Southern Avenue. Oh, my goodness, man. I told myself the biggest lie I ever was. I told myself, what would it be like just to try it one time since my body has been clean for 14 days, and then I'm going to start this process of recovery that you people have been talking about. You know what I'm saying? So I proceeded to, I always thought stuff. You know, I was like Herman Head, I think stuff, and then I begin to act on it. You know, I don't know if anybody else did. I always think of all kind of stuff, you know, and I say, well, I'm not going to do this part. I always justified what I was doing as some kind of lymph and stuff, you know. So I justified that maybe I could just do one. And I think I did just do one, you know. Maybe that day, you know, I got what I needed, you know, and I went back on that job, you know. The people on the job seeing my behavior really didn't change, you know. I was still doing the same thing, expecting something different, you know. Like I said, I wasn't doing it every day, you know, but and I used to go to meetings. And I don't suggest this for nobody. I used to go to meetings under the influence. You know, I was going into meetings. I came in the program in 89. My clean date is 92. So, I mean, I spent 3 years of thorough research of trying to figure out a safe way to use. You know, it never dawned on me to stop using, you know. All I wanted to do was just find a safe way to use, you know. So I was in and out, you know. I was picking up key tags, you know. I got so many white key tags, it's unbelievable, you know. But I never accumulated any time, you know, period of time. I never could get 2 weeks or something like that. It was always 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, or whatever, you know. And then I end up picking up, and I tell myself, you know, that insane thing that maybe I could just do one and it'd be all right. But like I said, my job picked up on my behavior, and they needed to, I don't know, for me, I'm the type of addict that on payday, if I didn't do nothing no other day, I was going to get high on payday. You know, I felt I owed that to myself, you know, if I was going to do it that day, you know. And I think my job kind of realized that, too. What happened was they called me in, you know, for a urine test on a Thursday. You know, payday was either Wednesday or Thursday, it was that payday. They called me in there, and I was in there talking about the urine might come up dirty, you know. Don't take it now, you know. Give me another chance, you know what I'm saying? I'm not going to do it no more. You know, these people that put me in treatment, they paid $15,000 for me to go and treat me. You know, and here I'm doing the same thing, expecting something different. You know, I sat up there and boo-hooed and cried. I told them people that the mailman was killing people back then, you know, so I came with some insane thing that I'm going to go down there and shoot the place up and all this shit and all that. I ain't even have a gun, you know. I can remember the gun I did have. I sold it to a cab driver. He thought I was trying to stick him up. I was trying to sell him the gun. You know what I'm saying? You know, I was just that scared, you know. But I said I was going to do that to people, but I realized today that when I seen that I couldn't control my usage, you know, because what happened was I did use and I continue to use, you know. And I can remember my mom sitting up there at my mom's table, you know, telling her that I just don't know what it is. I just can't stop. You know what I'm saying? I used to read the literature under the influence. I said, I just can't stop. I don't know what it is. You know, it's just, I used to read the literature. It say three things that would defeat us in our recovery, you know, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. You know what I'm saying? And I had no clue of what they were saying because I was neither one of the three, you know. I always lie to myself, you know, even if I lie to you, you know. And I just wrestle with it, you know. I wrestle with methadone. I wrestle with that, you know. And I thank God for Seton House today. What happened was, I don't know about you, but every January, even though my addiction, I always make a resolution that I'm going to stop using on January the 1st. You know what I'm saying? I use all year long. Then all of a sudden, January the 1st, I say I'm going to stop. You know what I'm saying? So one more year, you know, January came up, January of 92, you know, came up. And what happened was that same job that had put me to treatment, you know, and when they took that urine test, you know, they laid me off, you know, for the first time in almost 15 years. I didn't have a job to go to. You know, I was going around the gardens, you know, I was watching guys doing what they had to do, but I wear a uniform and I had a status symbol, so I thought that I was cut above so I can get credits, I can get ticks, and I can get what I want and go, you know what I'm saying? But what happened was when I got laid off that job and I went around the gardens and they ain't had no uniform and they ain't had no money, they proceeded to put me to work. You know what I'm saying? They told me I had to do some of the same things that everybody else out there was doing. I really didn't like it because I really wasn't cut out to be that type of person. I don't think God put me on that earth to be that type of person. But I did what I had to do to get what I wanted. You know, so I, like I said, I justified it. But that January, you know, I made that New Year's resolution, January the 1st, my mother's birthday. My mother was born January 1, 1914, you know. And I said that I was going to stop. You know, I made this, but one more time, I made a sincere prayer I wasn't going to use today. I was going to give it up, Wendy. This is it. You know, I'm going to throw the towel in. You know, I'm going to throw the towel in. I ain't going no more. January the 1st, I stopped. You know, I stopped. But my brother's birthday, January the 2nd, so I went back again. I always come up with some insane things that maybe, you know, to say that, you know, I can use, you know what I'm saying? So I was right back there. It's funny now, but it wasn't funny then. It wasn't funny because I didn't want to use. I used against my will. You know, I really used against my will, you know, and days went by. You know, I can remember laying up in that bed, you know, my friend was going out, she's going to work every morning. I'm laying up there, you know, feeling less than a man, wondering how a guy like me one more time. And I started looking back on all the things I had done to get to where I was at. I said, how many times have I told myself that I wasn't going to do it, and I did it anyhow? I wake up in the morning with the sincere desire not to use. But somewhere along the course of the day, I end up using, and that's the way it was. You know, I was going to meetings by then. You know, I was going to meet, like I said, I don't suggest for nobody. I had paraphernalia in my sock. When they say, go outside, carry the paraphernalia in, come back in for the message of hope, I say, don't nobody know what's in my pocket. It's real simple. They don't know what's in my pocket, you know what I'm saying? But what happened was the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous overpowered all my thinking and what I thought. Because they said, if you just keep coming back, you know, the process will take hold, you know, because I really didn't do a lot. I just came. I just kept coming. You know, I called a place called Seton House Providence Hospital. My insurance was getting ready to lapse, you know, and they weren't going to accept me. I called another place called Holy Cross, and God intervened. And, you know, I know it was the only God of my understanding that began to show me that I really didn't have to go through some of the things I wanted. So he gave me opportunity. He placed me in Seton House, you know, even with the lapsed insurance, you know, because my job had sent me there the previous time, you know, and they put me in there. And they brought me in there for 7 days. 7 days, and I can remember a guy named Dr. Foster examining me. He set me on the bed, and he examined me, and he was saying, he said, Cedric, there's really nothing that physically wrong with you. I say, mentally, you just gone. You know what I'm saying? He said, it's not physically. You know what I'm saying? I couldn't understand. I say, well, physically, that was killing me, you know, the physical part. But he said, well, we can cure that part, but you got to do the other part. And they told me in treatment what I could do. They wrote down a list. They said, put down three things on that list of where you at. You know, I put down, I was detoxing off 60 milligrams of meth. I was smoking a pack of half of Newports a day. I was shooting a bag of dope and a half a day. I was shooting cane. I was drinking a 16-ounce Colt 45, and I was calling myself Billy D. Williams. And I was crazy, you know what I'm saying? And what happened was, they say, put down in that list, where you at? And I think I did an early, enlightened to the steps right there in treatment, because they say, put down where you at, where you would like to be at in the second column, and what you want to do about it. And like I said, the cigarettes and all that stuff that was so burden on me, you know. And they told me to go to a meeting somewhere and tell them my name is Cedric, and I need some help, you know. And I heard these things over and over and over again in them 3 years, countless of times, you know, from other people, everybody suggested that maybe I go try to seek some help somewhere or get some. But until I admitted that myself, there was no hope. There was no hope. So what happened was I wrote down in that column, I put that down on paper, and I went to that, I got out of the Redskins that just won the Super Bowl. I'm a Redskins fan. They had just won the Super Bowl that year, you know, and I was in treatment, you know, I was sitting up there, and I didn't know if I was going to stay clean after that. I really didn't know, but I knew I wanted a new way of life. I wanted to do something different. They told me, you already know how to get high. I said, what you want? You need to try something different. You know what I'm saying? But I said, they don't know that I was unique, that didn't nobody do all the things I did, didn't nobody shoot as much dope as I did, didn't nobody. Oh, man, all that shit was going through my head. You know, it was, I had to go a healing, cleaning process, because when I came here, I was physically, mentally, and spiritually gone. You know, I didn't know which way was up, you know. And what happened was, you know, I went to that meeting, a guy just like me was Shan, you know, and I feel a little strange and inadequate now standing up here, Shan, because I really don't do a lot of Shan to that point. I like to work from behind the scenes, you know. It's not the point of me, because I know my story, and my story what keeps me clean one day at a time. But there's a lot of people I feel that's more qualified to come up here and carry the message of hope and recovery. But what I say to myself and my sponsor, I always say, you know, that my story is my story, you know. And so that's all I can share is my story. And if somebody get out of it, if somebody gonna get something out of it. But what I said to myself, if don't nobody else get nothing out of this, I'm going to get something else out of this, I'm saying? Because I'm not trying to go today, you know what I'm saying? I'm not trying to go, you know. And in the process, it really happened. You know, I sat there, I wrote that down in the column, the guy shared, I threw my hand up. I said, he shared, I said, my name is Cedric, I'm an addict, and I don't know what to do, I need some help. The guy said, hold up, Sam, just sit there, wait till the meeting, we'll talk to you after the end of the meeting. And a guy came to me over the meeting. He said, Slim, come here. He said, man, I said, what do you want? He said, I heard you sharing it. He said, where you stay? I said, stay in New Carlton. He said, what I suggest you do is go home, pray, don't use, and come back tomorrow. God damn. I said, what? I would wait for a profound statement or something, you know? Well, I wait for this guy to tell me something that's going to stop me from using besides go home, don't use, pray, and come back tomorrow. That's not what I was expecting. Right. I'm saying, but that's what I got. God gave me right then what I needed. And what happened was I tried that one day, you know, and it's just one day. And like I said, January, it's been 16 years, you know. One day at a time. My sponsor always say that he would never use again. But my philosophy is, and that's what helped me here today, is that I will never use today. They told me if I wanted to use, just put it off till tomorrow. I'm saying, if something going on with you that bad, try to go through whatever it is, and if you want to use, do it tomorrow. And most times tomorrow is always something different. It does change, you know. And I always, one of my biggest things was that, what would I do if my mother ever passed, you know. I wrestled with that, you know, and after 13 years in the program, you know, 05, you know, my mother passed at the good old age of 91 years old. Right. I'm saying, and I kind of gotten myself and my sponsor picked me up and people got around me. I seen a program of Narcotics Anonymous in work. You know, they swarmed around me and scooped me up and told me it's going to be all right. You know, they put me up under their wings, and they rolled with me and took me around. I'm boo-hooing and crying. And I was still going through the thing about withdrawal, about losing my mother. And what happened with, helped me with that was my daughter. My daughter came, called me on the phone. She said, Daddy, I know you all messed up and stuff about, you know, Grandma. She said, but Grandma seen you clean for 13 years. I say, oh, my goodness. It never even dawned on me, you know. That it was, because she was always at my anniversary. She was always my support. You know, when everybody else turned their back on me, Mom was there, because I'm a mama's boy. I'm the youngest of 12. You know, it was 12 of us. You know, like I said, I was wearing baggy pants before that stuff was fashionable. Everything I had was passed down to me and everything. You know, I always wanted to be over somebody else's house or something else. You know, it was always because I didn't feel like my home was adequate enough. But what I realized today in Narcotics Anonymous, my mother did the best she could with what she had. You know what I'm saying? So it was my turn to try to come in here and do something. And I may not have been able to repay my mother, like I'm never going to be able to pay Narcotics Anonymous, but what it is, though, I can repay by just staying clean. Right. You know, and a guy took me, a guy took me to lunch one day about 17 years ago. He took me out to eat. Big guy, he had a big old conversion van. I waited for another meeting to start. I was new in the program. He took me out and took me to Roy Rogers and gave me a sandwich and some stuff. He asked me, did I want some fries, you know what I'm saying? And I thought the guy thought I was gay or something, you know what I'm saying? I really didn't know, unconditional, you know. I really didn't know how to take that, you know. But the guy said, when I get a job, man, I'm going to pay you back. I'm going to give you this and give you that. He said, hold up. He said, what I want you to do is get yourself together so you can help somebody else to come behind you. I said, oh, my goodness. And that's why I try to stay here, you know, one day at a time. You know, like Wendy was saying, it's not only the drugs and alcohol that keep me in bondage. It's a lot of other things. Like she said, relationship, like I said, we couldn't do all that in a half an hour. But I'm going to share this, what's really been. It was like she was talking about the craving, the disease, you know, the obsession that you go with. My sponsors know about this. I am a lottery playing fool. I love Maryland and D.C. lotteries. I'm saying because I don't use drugs today. I don't shoot dope. I don't trick. You know, I don't smoke. I haven't smoked a cigarette in 14 years. So I feel like lottery is my outlet to get a release of some of the stress and stuff that's under me, you know? But see, normal people don't play $100 worth of numbers a day. I'm saying that's obsession and compulsion. And I'll be wrestling with that where I just want to play right now. I'm to the point now. I celebrated 16 years January 26th. And what has happened is that I didn't play that day because I was going around, running around trying to get ready for my anniversary. And in that process, God, some kind of way, intervened and did for me what I couldn't do for myself. Because I've been wrestling with numbers for years. But what happened was, I haven't played a number since I celebrate my anniversary. You know what I'm saying? And for anybody else, it may sound trivial. But to me, when I go into 7-Eleven to get my tea, and I hear them punching on the machines, I sweat. You know? I think. And what I think is that I can get one. You know what I'm saying? Just one. Even if I don't have to play $100 worth, I can just play $1 worth, $2 worth. But if I think back on my story 16 years ago, I know that one is too many and 1,000 of them. My name is Seth Gamayagan. Thanks for having me, Michelle.